All right, the title of the fourth lesson is Those Who Hear God's Voice Above That of the People. If you were here last week, some of the passages that we looked at, Jeremiah 10, verse 23, it's not a man that walks to direct his own steps. Then we also looked at the example from 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 6 and 7, and that, of course, is the history where Samuel was upset when the people said, "We want a king," and God said to Samuel, "They've not rejected you, they've rejected me." People thought that that was going to be a better idea, to have an earthly king, and God said that was not true. Then, of course, we also finished up with Romans 10, verses 1 through 3. Paul said, "Brethren, my heart's desire, my supplication to God is for them that they might be saved." But, they were ignorant. They had a zeal for God, but it was not according to knowledge. Then we left off with a paragraph, "However, despite man's inability to direct his steps, he has continually relied on others as weak as he is to guide him." There is maybe no better illustration of this than the recent shootings that we've had, especially what took place in Connecticut. If you've watched some of the news, what are some of the suggestions being forth? Well, we've got this problem. So how are we going to stop school shootings, or at least limit them?
Put police in the school.
All right, let's put police in the school. Another idea is? All right, let's pick up some new gun control laws. Let's limit what people can have or limit what people can buy. Anything else? All right, mental health. We need to go ahead and do a better job of policing the people who may not be in possession of all their mental faculties. Anything else?
Okay,
could have a security guard, or it could be like Israel, where some of the teachers are actually armed. One of the anybody else need a copy of the book? What are some of the things that have not been said, as far as maybe reasons why things? In the most recent case and other recent cases.
Teaching of God.
All right. You know, we think about the teaching of God and various things as far as respecting life, society. Once you get rid of God, he's the one that teaches us that, life has come from him, so it needs to be respected. Nobody's saying anything about that, or almost nobody.
Kind of, when you look at the situation and how it was broadcasted to the whole nation, somebody out there that's got an evil heart, it kind of drives them to the point where they say, "Man, I've got conflict, some evil or some real disaster here. I'm going to do the same thing."
Yeah.
And we already heard that there was somebody that was going to be like a copycat.
Yeah, it doesn't take long. You've got what happened in Colorado as far as a movie theater, and somebody says, "Well, I can do it better, or I can have a different kind of plan." The world's interesting. On the one hand, it says, "Oh, what a great tragedy, how terrible this is." And then when it features almost 24/7 coverage of that, if you look on some of the cable networks, what's it do? On the other hand, glorifies it, elevates it. And there was a time, they've gotten away from this, but I don't remember the shootings, you just kind of have to number them. And if you go back 10 or 12, memory's still good enough where I remember that some of the news service organizations said that they were going to stop broadcasting them to the degree that we again see. But it's just too tempting of a target. You know, everybody else is kind of, well, if this is what all the other broadcasters are doing, then let's go ahead and focus on here as well. Some of the other things that I didn't hear about. The fellow was from a broken home, and, we certainly don't believe that every case where there's a divorce, a person's going to become, a psychopath or something like that, a killer. But nobody talked about that. There have been some suggestions, true or not, we'll have to see whether these are borne out by the facts, but the mom seemed kind of preoccupied with the school. At least that was one of the things that was indicated in a report. The son didn't feel like he was getting the attention that he wanted, and there's not been any mention of God. Now, I find that to be interesting. You stack all these things up as far as some things that have been mentioned, especially some things that have not been mentioned, and the items that we just went through as far as things that have not been mentioned, the world just seems to neglect those and reject those as far as being possibly contributing factors and maybe huge contributing factors. But the world, remember, it wants to direct its own steps. It wants to say, this is the problem, this is the solution, and then you just wait until the next time. And then maybe next time it's worse, maybe next time it's not so bad, and then there's some more hand-wringing, and well, let's do this, let's do that, and it just never improves. But when people hear the voice of the people above God's voice, lesson 4, heartache is going to be persistent and consistent.
Probably, at least to me, one of the worst things about all of what you said there was,
It is. And we see that with our next passage, which is Acts 5. The world, when they're exposed to that kind of thing, they are very, very upset. He cites for us Acts 5:29. Somebody want to turn over there for us? Acts 5, all right, Dolores. And just to give you one more second, we'll go ahead and get it keyed up here. When Jesus sent his apostles out to preach the gospel, they were obligated to declare what their master told them, not what the people wanted to hear. And today that's still a common thing. People want to hear things, and people often feel pressure to tell people what they want to hear. Sometimes the people, and more especially the leaders of the people, resented these godly men and tried to stop their preaching. So in the fifth chapter of Acts, we learn that the apostles were put into prison for preaching Christ, and when they were brought before the council, they, of course, had been charged not to teach in his name. And let's see what their reply was. Acts 5:29. Okay. 5:29. Okay, our blanks. We've got to obey God rather than man. We know what you want to hear. We know that you would prefer us not to preach and teach, but we also know what God's will is. And of the two choices, God's going to win out. Well, it needs to be our same choice in today's world. And as Stan mentioned, it is not popular. They scream bloody murder in the first century. And today, when people are told this is God's way, this is God's plan, they are no less enthused about it today. So it's time to just, pull up the pants and buckle up the belt and say, we're a Christian. And this is the way things are. You may not like it, but we're not going to change. And this is the right path, regardless if you are interested in following it or not. Anything you want to add or ask, or what we've said so far? Okay, let's pick up then with completely new material. He says, we shall now study some leaders who listened to the voice of the people and thus disobeyed God. Well, as we said, this is still taking place time and time again today. King Saul is first, 1 Samuel 15. We have here an account of his being sent to the Amalekites, and we'll look at various verses. We'll start with verse 3. Somebody want to pick that up for us? All right, Steve, Betty, and then we'll ask you to pick up verses 8 and 9, and then Harvey, we'll ask you to pick up verse 20. Steve, 1 Samuel 15:3.
Now go and smite the Amalekites, and utterly destroy all that they have, and spare them not, slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass.
What was Saul told to do? Go in and wipe it out. Just destroy everything possible can. Now, would you say that the command was clear or not clear? I mean, God, it would have been one thing to just say go destroy it, but God's specific, and he leaves no doubt as far as what heaven's will was. In fact, it's impossible to understand or somehow try to, twist the commandment. All right, Betty, if you will, verses 8 and 9, 1 Samuel 15. Two questions. Number one, did Saul do as he was commanded? No. How did he mess up the command? What did he fail to do?
Didn't kill everything.
He saves the king. And what else? All right. Basically, the cream of the crop gets saved. If you relate this to Jeremiah 10:23, remember, man likes to direct his own steps. People, for the most part, do not like to be told what to do. And this is true in a lot of different places. If you see, for example, in the workplace, and there are exceptions to this, but don't you think that in the workplace, the boss comes in and says, hey, do that. Think there's some people that resent that?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people that do. Who are you? Well, I'm the guy that signed your check. I'm the guy you signed up to work for. You think kids resent sometimes what parents tell them to do?
Yes.
They might say, okay, but as soon as you turn away, boy, you just wait till I get a little bigger. That kind of thing. You think husbands and wives can resent each other when they talk about, hey, this needs to be done, that needs to be done? So a lot of that goes back to the right spirit. I mean, you can say things in a poor and a bad way where people, resent it. But at the same time, people sometimes struggle because whose ideas are always the best? Ours are, right? Ours are. We always have the best ideas. And again, that's not true for everybody, but that's kind of a natural tendency. You know, we bring something, if it's food, if we do something, as far as we're making something out in the shop, we always are somewhat partial to the things that we make or the things that we develop. All right, Harvey, verse 20, 1 Samuel 15.
Saul did understand, okay, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord, have gone the way in which the Lord sent me, and I have brought Agag, the king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites.
Mm-hmm, sure. Let's back up also to verse 13, if you would. Same chapter, verse 13.
Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, Blessed be thou, the Lord, I have performed the commandment of the Lord.
All right, so God's prophet shows up, and is King Saul pretty cheery? He seems pretty happy to me. Everything's okay. Offers the reassurance. Well, we know that's not the case. And then you read verse 20, verse 21, which he didn't have in the book. But the people took of the spoil, the sheep, the oxen, and the chief and devoted things to sacrifice unto Jehovah thy God in Gilgal. So he now tries to whitewash it as well. Well, yeah, it didn't go the way that I was told to go, but you know, we've got a good plan for it. Once again, it goes back to man trying to direct his own steps.
He tries to blame it on the people too.
Yeah. And we're going to see that with Aaron as well. And that's always the good fallback position. Well, it wasn't my fault. It was... Yeah, the previous employer or the previous administration or the previous mayor, whoever it is, it doesn't matter. But you've always got that kind of justification, and it's never worked. But people still continue to try it. Anybody else before we pick up with verse 24? Okay, in the 24th verse, and Saul said unto Samuel, I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of Jehovah and thy words, because I, and here it is, as Betty mentioned, I feared the people and obeyed their voice. At least you have to give Saul enough credit. I mean, he's called on the carpet, and finally he does come right out and admit, you know, I sinned. I did blow it. And then he gives, you know, he kind of backtracks a minute and says, well, yeah, I sinned, but a little bit like Adam and Eve, isn't it? Well, yeah, I ate the fruit, but it was the woman. Yeah, blame it in the devil, blame it in the wife. So today, it's the same kind of thing. He says from the 24th verse, we learn that Saul admitted his sin and also gave a reason for it. What was the reason? He feared the people. You think people today fear folks?
I think that's a lot of fear of man.
Yeah, it is. When you think about politicians, you have always a fear that they're not going to be reelected or they're going to have, you know, be deluged with email and various things. I think there's probably no better example of fear. And I've not seen it. I've just read about it. But I think there's enough information out there to conclude it's true. That when you look at Washington, D.C., they've got more tunnels there than gophers have in Indiana. They just have literally put all kinds of tunnels under there. And bunkers, too. Well, who do you think are going to go to the bunkers? I would imagine the elite. The politicians and the other people that, you know, want to go ahead and preserve their lives in the case of some kind of serious attack or something else. And there has to be fear at the root of that. There has to be some level, some degree of concern. So even the people who claim to be, you know, powerful and influential, the rich and so forth, the fear of the people is a big, big thing. And at any part of the economic scale that we can turn to, it's still an issue. Any thoughts before we pick up with point E? Harvey?
Well, I know back when they changed from Christians,
fear binds a lot of people. You have a person, for example, who's in an abusive relationship. Woman, man, doesn't matter. And yet they stay with the abuser for years and years. Why? Well, there could be a lot of different reasons, but fear, I think, is one reason. You have fear, how am I going to support myself? Situation here is not good, but at least I have a roof and, you know, I have the basic necessities of life. You also have fear of the unknown. There was an old story. I have to go back and really do some looking. It's been years since I've seen it, but some foreign country. There was this big door, and I mean just a huge door, and people, criminals I'm guessing, were brought over to the area where the door was, and the official said, you have two choices. We can shoot you, and it'll be quick. Or we can open up the big doors for you. Which do you want? Now, according to the story, which I'm under the understanding that was true, there was only one guy that went through the big door. And the big door led to freedom. And people consistently chose the firing squad because at least they knew what that was. You never know what's behind the door. I mean, are lions back there? Is it a snake pit? You know, crocodiles, you know, going to rip you apart? You don't know. But at least with the threat of death, you know, a few bullets, bang, 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 I'm dead. And at least I know my end that way. And fear does grip a lot of people in just so many ways. And it is an awful thing, but it's a powerful thing. I was thinking about that same story when you were heading down that road. But yeah, I read that same email. It's been a good while ago, but you're right. You know, fear does cause some people to just not see something through, even though they, on some level, believe in it. Okay, same chapter, 1 Samuel 15. Let's also pick up the information that we have in verse 23. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as idolatry and teraphim. Because thou hast rejected the word of Jehovah, he hath also rejected thee from being king. He says, from this verse, give the result of Saul's sin of pleasing the people rather than pleasing God. What did Saul lose? All right, his kingdom. God says, I'm going to replace you. There's going to be another ruler because you allowed fear to rule in your life. Remember in Revelation 21, verse 8, the Bible talks about some things that don't please God, some people that are not going to be in God's presence and fellowship. The liars, the abominable, the unbelieving, and the fearful. Very good. So it is something that God's been concerned about, something that God has warned about repeatedly. Before we look at the next illustration, anything that you want to touch base on? Okay. Point two, he says the Israelites in the wilderness. Let us look once more at the sight pictured in lesson three. This, of course, was the lesson we talked about hiding God's word in our heart. When Moses was up on the mountain receiving the Ten Commandments, his brethren were below, and they were clamoring for gods to worship. With these people was Aaron, the brother of Moses, who had been speaking to the people for Moses because Moses was not an elegant man. He says, if anyone in Israel should have known how to lead the people and keep them sound, Aaron should have. But when we look at this example, it reminds us that sometimes even the best people fail. Now, we'd like to think that folks would be like the apostles in Acts 5 where they'd always stand firm if they are God's people. But there are still occasions where the best men and women for God have some shortcomings. And here would be one of those cases. He says, what did he do? We're pulling this from Exodus 32, verses 2 through 4. What did he do, though, as seen from these verses? Anybody turn back there, Molly? Okay, Exodus 32, verses 2 through 4. Alright, so our question is, what did he do? Got gold that came from the earrings of the people, and when he had that golden hand, what did he do with it? Alright, melted it down, and then made a golden calf. So he should have known better, but he caved in to the people, as we see from the 22nd verse. Molly, if you're still in the chapter, would you read verse 22 as well? Exodus 32. Oh, isn't that great? About like Saul back in the previous reference that we looked at. He says the people were sent, the people were bent on mischief. Those nasty folks, which, you know, were really his brethren, but he blamed it on the people. And then he says, notice in verse 24 how he tried to downplay his part in their sin. So stepping back, distancing himself a little bit more from what was done. And I said unto them, whosoever hath any gold, let them break it off. So they gave to me. And then, yeah, he says, I did have a little part in the process, but as far as fashioning the calf, how was it made? Oh, it just came out of the fire. Isn't that great? And I read the most interesting article the other day, and I thought, well, I've got to finish this before I go on to some other stuff, because I'm just going to wonder about this. But this lady described her household. She has multiple young children. She said, I do laundry 4 days a week. And it sounded like that was a lot of laundry, 4 days a week. So if you've got 4 or 5 small kids, you can kind of appreciate that. And she said, sometimes, as I do laundry, she said, the socks come out of the dryer folded. And I thought, you know, that's kind of weird. You know, I'm not the best cook in the world, and some of the things are on the house, but I get by, and I've done some laundry over the years, some before I got married, and some now that I'm married. And I have never seen a pair of socks come out of the dryer folded. I just thought, wow, how's that work? So I just had to read and went through the article a little bit more. And then this lady explained. She said, well, one of my helpers is about 3. And sometimes that 3-year-old will go over to the drawer, pull out some socks, and she throws those folded socks in the dryer. And then, of course, after the wet clothes have been dried, the socks are still folded. And I thought, okay, now I understand. Now that makes sense. But, you know, that makes about as much sense as, you know, saying, well, hey, the gold just happened to come out in the form of a cap. Well, we just can't believe that. You know, there's got to be some explanation. In this particular case, the explanation was he fashioned it. He was the one who melted it down. He was the one who would have molded it and made it and so forth. And like I said, just some things that are just so crazy, you just have to say that's a lie. That's simply not true. So tell me, as we see from verse 4, tell me really what took place. Yeah, if you would.
And he received them at their hand and fashioned it with a crazy tool after he had made it in molten calf. They said, he gods, O Israel, which brought thee up out of the land of Egypt.
Thank you. Yes, just as those socks were folded by somebody, so that golden calf was fashioned by someone. And the person in this case, of course, was going to be Aaron. You know, when we look at this, it's really no different. Some paraphrases, I guess you might say, in Romans 12, where Paul said, be not fashioned according to this world. Some translations would say something like, don't be squeezed into the world's mold. That's really what the world often tries to do to God's people. Tries to get us to conform, tries to get us to mold, to shape ourselves, to squeeze ourselves into its mold. And oftentimes, it's easier to be squeezed into the mold than to say, we're not going to go in the direction of everyone else. But Aaron, good man in so many ways, but he did allow himself to conform to public pressure and then essentially lied about it, and we want to avoid that mistake today. One more thing, and then we'll see if there's anything that you'd like to contribute. Aaron made the same mistake that the people are making today. Namely, he did not ask God what he should do as the people made their demands. He listened to the people instead. Then from Exodus 20, verses 3 and 4, tell what commandments were violated when the calf was made and worshipped. Exodus 20, 3 and 4. Lisa.
You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below.
Okay, how many commands of the 2 would you say were violated by the golden calf?
2.
All right, I would say 2. What would one of the 2 be? All right, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And the second one would be? All right, no graven images, no idols. And on both of these, you know, 2 out of 10 is not good when you're looking at things from this perspective. And, you know, basically 20% is what they fouled up on as far as the Ten Commandments are concerned. Additional thoughts before we pick up with Galatians 1, verse 10? Okay, who'd like to be a reader for Galatians 1? 10th verse? All right, Lois, and that's going to be Lois Craw. Okay, Paul, being a preacher, being a well-known preacher, going to a lot of different places, he faced this same kind of thing in his life. He, you know, when you're with the idolaters, when you're with the people that are making the idols, how difficult is it going to be to go into town and say, hey guys, you know, I know you've got a great business here, but you want to go to heaven? You got to shut down your shop. Or you're going to have to retool things and make some other items. Well, you think that's going to make some folks very happy? That's not going to be the kind of preaching that's going to go ahead and really get you near and dear to the hearts of people. Or you go to the Jews and say, well, I know, yeah, I was part of this religion too, and it's thousands of years old, and sure, Moses was involved with it, and sure, God gave the law, but hey, guess what? God has a new system. You just have to forget what you're doing. probably didn't make him real popular. So Paul, as he looked at his life, he said, I've got to make a choice. Am I trying to persuade men? Am I trying to please men? Or am I trying to please God? For if I yet please men, if I try to appease people, then I can't be a servant of Christ. So we have to make a choice. The world often says, well, let's just straddle the fence, and politicians are good at that. We'll try to please this group, and we'll try to please this group, not say too much and not do too much, and we'll just, you know, the ground can be a little rocky at times, but we'll just go ahead and not rock the boat too much. Paul said, when it comes to spiritual things, you can't do it. If you want to please Christ, there are going to be some people that you make unhappy in life. And then you've probably looked at John 12, 42 and 43, or at least we should be familiar enough with these verses to know what they say. Many of the chief rulers believed on the Lord, but because of the, who? Pharisees, they didn't confess it. So here were some people, they had faith. And once again, maybe on one level, they decided that we really want to do what's right, we want to follow the Lord, but they didn't follow through with it because they thought, we're going to be put out of the synagogue. And then too, the text says, they love the praise of men more than the praise of God. I'm going to make this announcement a little bit later as far as a devotional, but I'll give you this information as well. You remember Grace, her last name is difficult to pronounce, but it's like this move. But she's from Goshen College. She's brought friends at various times. One of those friends is Tegan, a young lady who lives in Indianapolis, and Tegan has worshipped with us off and on for about a year. Last Monday, Tegan, well, she must have been thinking about this long and hard because it was about 1 o'clock in the morning from the date on the email. I didn't get it at that time, but she sent an email, a very nice email. And she said, I'm Tegan Johnson, and been coming, you know, there for a while with Grace and so forth. And she said, in the email, I thought long and hard about this. And there have been many mornings where I thought about coming forward and asking to be baptized. I've not done it yet, but I've talked to my family. And, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And she says, I'm sure I'm ready. Now, she's out of town right now, so my contact with her didn't result in additional contact. Until today, she had a phone call with me for a little while, and she said she wants to go ahead and do that about the 9th of January. So at this point, you know, you try not to wait on those things, but sometimes there's some circumstances where, you know, if a person says this day, then it just seems like that's about the best that you're going to be able to do. So that's kind of what we're looking for in this particular case. But I thought you'd think about this lady. She's away from home. She is at a school that even though it's a religious school, there are still some serious, serious issues there as far as morality and some other things. You think about her family, not members of the Lord's church, having the courage to talk to them and say, you know, this is something that I've thought about, something I want to do, something I don't think that her family, at least at this point, is on board with, and then the courage to go ahead and actually reach out and, you know, say. So here's this young lady, 21 years old, and then you've got these grown men, and not just one, but several, and they say, we're not going to confess him because we're going to be put out of the synagogue. We love the glory, you know, that's associated with men than God. So it really speaks badly of these folks, but we do find some people who are courageous in this way. Then I tell you that not only for the sake of the illustration relative to the book, but I also want to make this point. She said, the people there are so friendly. She didn't say you've got such a great song leader, which I think we do. And she didn't say the preaching has convinced me, which, I mean, hopefully that helped. But the thing that she emphasized was friendliness. So when you see people come in the door, regardless of whether you're a socialite or an extrovert or not, the fact that you greet people, the fact that you pay attention to people, even if it is a quick, hi, glad to see you, that may help save somebody's soul. In this particular case, it has contributed. And then, if you're not fond of potlucks, well, here's a reason to attend the potlucks. They've attended at least a couple potlucks. And when you think about college kids being away from home, school cafeteria food gets old, usually very, very quickly. And once again, that's a way to go ahead and spend some time with people and encourage folks. So those are my two for 2012, my two pitches for potlucks and to go ahead and look for people who are visitors. Okay, anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with Rehoboam? He's next. He says, when Solomon died and his son Rehoboam ascended the throne, the older people came to him and promised to serve him if he would lessen the burdens left them by Solomon. He told them he would reply a little later to their request. In the meantime, he consulted with his younger friends, those nearer his age and with whom he grew up. We're going back now to the book of 1 Kings, the 12th chapter, and we'll start with verse 10. From here, we'll see what these friends, these associates, told him to say. All right, Betty, 1 Kings 12, verse 10. Okay, and then did we have, was it the scorpions? Was that in 11?
No,
okay, yeah.
Now, whereas my father laid a heavy yoke on me, I will add to your yoke. My father chastised me and spoke to me, but you with scorching.
Okay, thank you. He didn't, in the book, list verse 11, but I wanted to have that passage read as well. Okay, he says, Dad, as far as how difficult life was for you, like a little finger. But he said, for me, the burden, the weight's going to be like the thickness of the waist. So when you think about a finger compared to the waist, I mean, obviously a huge, huge difference. And that was a way of affirming what? You really have three different illustrations here. Light, heavy, which is a plain statement. Finger, waist. And then you get down to verse 11, which makes the comparison between Dad, it was like whips with him, but now it's going to be like scourges or scorpions. So very, very difficult. That was the answer from Rehoboam. What, you think that's what people wanted to hear? Be like people today saying, oh, we need a tax break. Government comes back and says, all right, we've thought about it. What are we going to do for taxes? You've been paying 20%? Now, or we're going to make it 80 or 90. We're going to take it all. Well, if they did that, what do you think would happen? I think, well, that's probably about right. There would be a lot of unrest in the streets. And that's what you have here. The kingdom decides, you know, the kingdom decides, well, hey, if that's the way it is, then what are we going to do? We're going to break away. So that was really the end of the so-called United Kingdom, because some young people, some younger people, we might say, gave some very, very poor advice. Then the writer makes this point, and this is one of the key thoughts. He says he did not ask God to help him. And if he had, God would not have given him the answer he wanted to hear. But it would have been the right answer. He listened to the voice of the people. It was clearly the wrong people. Today, as we've said at the, you know, throughout the class, especially at the beginning, this is precisely what is still taking place today. Folks will look in every solution, at every solution, and in every place except, you know, the right source for the ills in society. And until people are willing to go back and start following the plan that God has given in His Word, things are not going to get better. Doesn't matter who is in control as far as our elected officials. We can put in all kinds of technology. I was kind of fascinated by the fact that the school apparently did everything right, going back to the shooting in Connecticut. So, I mean, unless you're going to go ahead and lock the place up like a jail, and you just have doors that are bomb-proof, and you know, you have windows that are shatterproof and barred. I mean, it's just a matter of time before. You know, there was another story. I don't remember exactly where it was, but there was a student. He was going to gather everybody in the gym. Anybody see that story?
In Oklahoma.
Was it in Oklahoma? Okay. And then he was going to put, bombs on the inside of the doors. So when the police tried to come through, you know, there would be some explosions. And I thought, you know, that's really the next level. It's just like anything else as far as aggression. You take away all the guns and the person says, well, okay, I don't have a gun to kill you, so well, let's just build a bomb. And with things like the internet out there, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to go ahead and make that possible. Or we'll just get a car and mow people down. You don't have to have a gun to kill people. So once you start heading down this road, a man tries to direct his own steps. It is something that has repeatedly proven to be a disaster. One more quick point, and then we'll pick up with Adam and Eve and some thoughts that you may have. It seems that people would learn to respect God when He's spoken, doesn't it? But more times than not, that's simply not the case. And, you know, Satan has been using this ruse on people for a long time to say, oh, yeah, it doesn't matter, and you can do what you want. But God specifically says, my way. Think about the principle that we've talked about before, Galatians 6. What you sow is going to be what you reap. And that's true in virtually every area of life as far as a general principle. Thoughts on the last section? Okay. He introduces Adam and Eve in our new paragraph. God made it clear that they could not eat of a certain tree. And when Eve was approached by Satan, she said to him, "We may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God said, ye shall not eat of it." And most people, I think, are familiar with this part of it. They say, oh yeah, may not remember that the fruit is unstated. Many think it was an apple or something else. But they do remember that, you know, the first couple was forbidden from eating it. But here is where I think where people maybe are not quite so mindful of the text. Neither shall ye touch it. I think God may have said, don't even touch it. I mean, it would have been one thing to say, don't eat it. Oh, okay, all right, that's off limits. But God said, you don't even touch it. All right, I think, you know, people sometimes, you know, the closer a person gets to something, the more likely they are to go ahead and actually, to one degree or another, try it, experiment with it, see what it's like. So I think that's part of the answer. Anything else? All right, I think that's another part of the answer. Anything else? There's at least one more element here that we might be able to tie into the thought. What's it say about obedience? You know, it's one thing to say, even in a parent-child situation, a parent says, you can't leave the house for whatever reason. Well, if you've had kids, and you've ever given that kind of illustration, depending on your children, you think you might have a child that opens the door, stands right there on the door sill, waves his hands outside maybe, and I mean, or sticks his head out the window. All right, now, am I inside or out? You know, a few smiles. I think if we've not had children like that or had that kind of experience, we've probably come across some children that do. Well, when you give that rule, what does it do? Doesn't it allow for there to be a test of whether or not the child is actually going to be obedient? God says you can't touch, you can't eat it, but also by not touching it, I'm saying I'm going to see if you're really going to distance yourself from it or if you're going to kind of go over here and see just how close you can get to the edge. So I think it really, as far as the third element here, may be a test of love and obedience. And?
I was just going to say,
yeah. So we do the same thing with kids sometimes, and they may do the same with us as far as how they respond. But people like to get as close to the edge sometimes as they possibly can. He mentions correctly, Eve ignored what God said. He ate the fruit. Adam, likewise, knowing what God said, ate. And we know about the consequences that came once they tried to direct their own steps. Additional thoughts before we pick up with another Old Testament story? Dolores? Yeah, well, it really was. I mean, when you think about the consequences that were involved with this, you can just say sometimes that's better to be avoided. You know, don't get real close to that. And then there are some other things where you say this is radioactive. You not only want to stay out of the room, yes, as far as where it is, but, you know, even in an outer area, this is just too dangerous for you to be in this particular place and in this particular state. And when we look at what's, you know, come from their partaking of that particular fruit, we can see why God tried to put such a... I mean, there was still free will, but he did try to give them plenty of distance between the sin, you know, of eating or touching this particular object and their state of righteousness. So yes, I think once again you have to recognize that boundary and just say this was so critical. He set it up in a way where it was designed to really keep them far, far from it. But the old devil, he is good at pulling people in, not only to touch it, but also to eat it. Anybody else? All right, we have here the Old Testament story, 1 Kings 13, about a man, a good man, a prophet from the area of Judah. 1 Kings 13, he says, tells us about this fellow. He went by, quote, the word of the Lord to Bethel. When King Jeroboam, and he was a bad king, heard that he cried against the altar in Bethel, that is, he came with some bad things to say about it. There was a prophecy. The king didn't want to hear the information, so he gave instructions that the man of God be apprehended. But at such an order, the king's hand dried up. Then at the request of the king, the man of God asked God to restore the king's hand. It was restored, whereupon the king invited the man of God to go home with him. What was the reply, as we see from 1 Kings 13:8? Who has the passage? 1 Kings 13, verse 8. All right, Lisa, we haven't called on you yet, so let's take your reading tonight.
The man of God said to the king, "May half thy house
Okay. Now, somebody might say you can have half my house, half my possessions. We might say, I don't want them all. I mean, your stuff is so junky and so bad, you couldn't pay me to take it. But you know, if you've got a king, you think he's got some pretty nice stuff in his place? I would imagine he's doing pretty well. So the king says, I'm willing to have you come home with me. And I will give you basically half of what's in my house. Pretty generous offer. And for a lot of people, they would have said, well, maybe I don't need that much, but, you know, at least I can get, you know, a little something and certainly a little food and water. But this young prophet said, not interested in what you have. And even if you want to give me, all right, you know, some nourishment, you know, even to eat in your house, I'm not willing to do that. So the man of God, he'd been told to go to this particular place, do his business, get out of town. So he's leaving the city. But then there's a guy who shows up, overtaken by a man. So he's the younger guy. The fellow who meets him is an older guy. And he's not only an older man, he's also a fellow who has, he served as a prophet in the past. I really don't know much about him. But this older, and I think probably former prophet, has something to tell him. Same chapter, verse 18. Lisa, you still there?
He said unto him, I am a prophet also, as thou art an angel. Say that to me, by the word of the Lord, saying, bring him back with thee into thine house, that he may eat bread and drink water, that he lieth unto me.
Okay. And would you also like to read down through verse 23? Okay, so back there in verse 18, this older prophet shows up, meets the younger prophet, and he says, oh, I'm here, because who gave me some insight? There was this angel. But the Bible also says it was a lie or it was the truth. He spoke a lie. So he convinces the younger prophet to come back to his house and eat, and even though those things were contrary to God's will, the younger prophet did that, and God was not pleased. The older prophet, as I said, I'm thinking the older prophet was sort of out of that business for whatever reason, but the Spirit of God seems to once again be animated in his life. He makes a prophecy, and the younger prophet eventually starts to go home, and what meets him on the way? She didn't read it yet, but verse 24, remember? There's a lion that meets him on the way, kills him. So when God said to this man, do not, you know, eat, you know, do not, you know, be involved as far as nourishment in the place where you're going, you know, there in Bethel, and he violated that commandment. Once again, Jeremiah 10:23, he decided to do some things that were contrary to God's will and way and ended up to be in serious trouble. Then that last paragraph, and we've got to wrap it up there, it's very easy to listen to a friend or to follow a multitude, a group of people, when we should be listening to God. Deceivers can seem sincere and trustworthy, and they can surely cause the unsuspecting to disobey their Lord. So we must be able to recognize the voice of the people for what it is and never let it deter us from our service to God. When you think about the book of Romans, in Romans 16:18, Paul, in talking about Paul's teacher, said they're smooth in their fair speech. Well, that's what you have back here in the story with the young prophet. Fellow was very, very convincing, conniving, we might even use that word, and he lost his life.